Breakfast with Matt and Alex.
Jono, make an audio grab of that one.
On Triple J.
And here we are in a podcast. What do you just think about every day?
I think we should revisit this topic tomorrow.
We came up with Zan because she just said she saw on Facebook one of her friends at Disneyland. She's like, oh, I think about Disneyland every day. And we're like, what? Like, what do you mean? She's like, oh, just at some point during the day, every day, without fail, I'll think, how good would it be to be at Disneyland right now?
Yeah. But I understand completely. I really do. Because I'm fixated at the moment by having beers by a pool in a tropical setting. Like, I was Googling hotels in Cairns just the other day just to look at them.
Like, you weren't planning a trip.
Just to satiate that, you know, that thirst. It's just like, I don't know what's going on. So I'm sure people have got that fixation. So let's find out tomorrow.
Yeah, we've sort of got a packed show tomorrow. We're just talking because this morning you'll be able to hear discussions surrounding makeup, and not just makeup if people want to put it on or not put it on, but forced makeup. You know, whether it is the expectation to look good and attractive and your best and, you know, do yourself up within yourself, or literally a boss saying, here's a makeup kit, I'll pay you more if you wear it. Well, or you'll lose your job if you don't start shaping up your face.
That is an interesting thing because I feel like it really, as long as there's no sexism involved, then it's probably okay if there is forced makeup, mainly because it would probably be for, as Zan put it, a presentation in industry. For instance, you are on... If you're on TV, both men and women will wear makeup.
Mm.
It actually has a purpose as well. It takes away shine from cameras. You won't sweat and all that sort of stuff. There's a reason for it. But then women have to put on a lot more other things, like, you know, usually lipstick, eyeshadow, all of those things.
What about the flight attendant industry that we're chatting about before?
So that's an interesting question.
Mm.
Because if the guys were also required to wear makeup because, let's say, they didn't want people sweating while, you know, sweating while they're walking down the aisle and giving people things, I would understand that. But if who he originally spoke to is saying is correct, and that the guys just go home early and they don't have to worry about it at all, then you have to really start questioning.
And don't have to fork out for it from their own pockets.
What the motives are.
Yeah.
All right? Because if it's not just a matter of covering up spots, then what exactly are they doing it for?
The uniform extending off the clothes that drape from you and onto literally your face. We need the red lipstick. That's part of the deal.
The uniform. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, we'll get into it, and tomorrow we'll delve into it a little bit more as well. But if we've got time, we'll also touch on, what do you think about?
Someone here's already said, I led a kid's school holiday class on how to make a bonsai, and now I think about what trees I see would look like bonsais every time I see a tree. So, I mean, what's going on? Like, people are you're sitting on a train with a group of people. Who knows what's going through their sick minds?
Isn't the answer just the same but smaller?
Well, I guess so. Every time, just thinking about how cool it would look, but smaller. Damn, that tree would look cool, but smaller.
All right, well, we'll get to it at some stage. But thank you for downloading our podcast. We'll catch you soon.
Bye. This is interesting because you were talking about waking up on the wrong side of the bed.
Yeah, my head was down where my feet should be.
Yeah, well, I mean...
My feet were on pillows. I hadn't...
Comfiest tootsies in the town. You and Rugsy should hang out. Very comfy toes indeed, my friend. Hey, which is a bizarre way to wake up, especially if you've gone to sleep with your head on a pillow.
Mm.
I would feel like it would be more realistic if you had taken your pillow and put it at your feet but still remained the same side of the bed. So, people texting in where they've woken up. My sister had a few too many and did the exact same thing in her swag.
That's a good effort.
I unzipped her swag only to find a pair of feet kicking around violently because she thought she'd been kidnapped. That would be worrying. Another person said, I went out for a few beers one night, woke up in the morning in a Chinese restaurant on the floor. I was locked in there, had no way of getting out, so I had to call a mate to go and find the owners to let me out. How that happens, I don't know.
Oh, that phone call. There's some phone calls. Well, I guess the government's doing it now anyway.
What, listening into our phone calls?
Yeah.
spying on us.
Pretty much.
Logging into laptop webcams.
I just wish the CIA had a little clause in which they could, if there was some reach, like proper funny ones, they could just put over, pass over to Triple J and we'd be able to play it for people.
So that,
such the phone calls like, yeah, hi, Dragon Inn, the wonderful Chinese restaurant. Yeah, my mate's in your restaurant right now. He's locked in. Could you go and let him out, please? We don't open till 12.
It'd be pretty good though, because you'd have solid bulk prawn crackers like on hand. You'd just be munching while you waited for people to come and get you.
One of the few things that you cannot stop eating.
I know.
You know, it doesn't fill up stomach room. I don't know which organ it goes into.
It's like popcorn. I don't think I've ever stopped eating popcorn. I've just run out of it. That's it. You don't put it down and think, I'll never touch that again.
The Diamonds won the first game 68 goals to 56.
Thank you very much, Ruby Jones.
Thanks, Ruby.
No problem. You're looking a little fresh faced today, Alex.
Oh, thanks.
Nothing helping you, no makeup, nothing?
Oh, no, didn't put any on this morning. We did have a chat yesterday to flight attendant. It was Sophie, I think, was heading along to flight attendant school, second day. Found out that she had to wear, the girls have to stay behind and learn how to put on the correct makeup.
Correct and amount as well.
Correct amounts, correct things.
Quite a lot. She was surprised by how much makeup they have to wear.
Exactly, and have to buy themselves.
Do you wear?
I've read studies that say that women who wear makeup to work get like more promotions and paid better than women who don't. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you wear makeup to work?
I did say that I would protest that.
No,
but I didn't have any makeup at home this morning.
Right. Well, I mean, you promised to raise awareness by coming in with a full makeover. Oh, so we're waiting. The women of Australia are waiting, Alex.
All right. Well, if you can help me.
Wait, no, I don't want this to happen. You're going to get paid more than me. This is not good.
Well, if you reckon you could help me, the protest. We've still got a few days left of the week to raise awareness for this ridiculous statistics that are coming through. 0439757555. You got a bit of spare. You got a little sparey. Bit of spare makeup going around and some spare time to potentially tell me how to do it properly.
I'd be intrigued to know who's gotten in trouble at their work for not wearing enough makeup.
Oh.
Like they've had to sit down and be like, you're going to get fired unless you cover up your skin. Let us know.
Yeah, 0439757555. But, yep, I'm with you, Ruby. The protest will happen.
All right.
So who's going to teach you how to do your makeup?
Look, I'm not very good at it. I think you need to find someone else.
Yeah, if you know what you're doing, 0439757555. I don't want to make it like a parody statement. And I'm like, oh, look at me. I'm wearing lots of red lipstick and I'm a boy.
You want full contouring, right?
I want something that will suit my face and make me look, good, but also prove a bit of a point. It's like, this is seemingly
unnecessary. How far are you willing to go? Because I think, your eyebrows could do with a bit of shaping.
Oh, wow.
Look, they're on fleek at the moment, and I regret mentioning that. So, thank you. But the eyebrows, I think, are fine. You don't need to be doing anything with them, do you? They're protesting as it is. Cheers, Ruby.
See ya.
It's aged like a fine wine. Hi from Peking Duck. Nicole Miller helping out on the vocals and be playing a few festivals. Towards the end of the year, as we come towards those warmer climes, or so the Bureau of Meteorology says. Julia Jacklin kicking things off with Coming of Age.
Well, there's a few people suggesting why the BOM might be getting hacked.
Why you'd hack the bomb.
Andrew says, apparently the BOM has a supercomputer which is used by the government for top secret stuff. That's why they want to hack it. That sounds pretty reasonable. All right.
Yeah, from Matt O'Kine, who's been on a lot of flat earth websites recently.
It's a classic misdirection, mate. Where do you hide the money in your room?
What happens to wind when it gets to the edge of the earth?
You don't hide money in your room in your bloody money box, mate. You hide it in your sock drawer where people can't smell it.
Let's get to someone who knows.
The other people. Okay, now let's welcome Ray Johnson to the show. Then we'll get into the chat with her. Hello,
hello
Ray.
Hello.
Tech journalist joining us here today.
Someone else about aliens. Okay, because weather radars are most likely to pick up UFOs. So that's why hacksaws are trying to find out the data. What do you
How'd you go last week when I was at a conference raid?
I'm liking this this rapid change of topic here from Alex. Yeah, no, we did really well. We didn't touch on conspiracy theories at all. Good. It was great.
Conspiracy theories or truths? You decide.
It's only a theory if it's not true.
Exactly.
But Ray, thanks for joining in with us this morning. You didn't bring any incendiary material into the studio with us because much like airports, we do have a little sign out the front. Please do not bring your Note 7s into the studio.
That's right. No, I did not bring a Samsung Galaxy Note 7 into the studio, and nor should anyone else take it anywhere other than back to where they got it from. Samsung have actually stopped production on these phones now. They've issued a worldwide recall of them. Even the replacement handsets that they were sending out to people have been catching on fire also. So these phones are not safe. I've spoken to some people who think that maybe it won't happen to them and they'll be totally fine just continuing to use it. But trust me, take it back. It's worth going without your phone for a day.
Oh, for sure.
So that you don't have it explode.
What is actually happening in this phone?
Okay, so it's a fault in the battery itself, in the battery manufacturing process. Samsung actually outsourced the manufacturing of these batteries to a number of different places. So what's happening is the cells within the battery are actually transferring heat from one to another rather than being self-contained until the whole battery itself reaches a temperature where it combusts, essentially. So there was an update that was pushed out to the previous models to limit the battery charging to 60% so that it potentially wouldn't reach that heat, but that is totally a band-aid solution. While you take it back to the store, give Samsung a call. They've got details on their website of everything you need to do.
Does this do to a company, though? Who was starting to make inroads into this mobile phone market, which is, for lack of a better word, very lucrative.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you think, you know, iOS and Android, most people think for the Android, a Samsung phone these days. Look, it is only the Note 7s that have been affected. Their S7 phone is still fantastic. You know, it's a great phone. It's one of the best smartphones out there at the moment. But yeah, with incidents a few years ago with their washing machines blowing up, catching fire, and now they've had more washing machines in the States catch fire as well. Samsung are unfortunately developing a bit of a reputation for being a bit combustible.
Okay, that's no good. Is there a price figure on how much this is going to cost Samsung?
I don't have a price figure, but yeah, it's going to be a lot. I'm sure that we'll see some theories come out in the next few days as to exactly how hard this will hit the company.
Probably do a cost analysis of it all.
They dropped.
I reckon under the final total line, it will just read shitloads. It's going to be up there.
So far on their Samsung shares, they dropped 7.5% and they wiped off 13.8 billion pounds off the value in the market.
Well, we're going to move on now because it is Mental Health Week this week as well. And Ray, you're going to tell us a little bit about the gaming side of things and how it can potentially help with people's mental health. And as part of Mental Health this week, taking a look at how, you know, games affect that side of people's behaviours and various things. And there's some pretty positive studies into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously not a substitute for seeking professional help. You know, Beyond Blue's got great resources. But there's also a website out there at the moment called checkpoint.org, which is a charity set up by a couple of psychologists who specifically look at, you know, video games for mental health. And yeah, they've got some recommendations in regards to mobile games because, you know, when you're having a panic attack, when you're overwhelmed by anxiety, when you're taking steps that would normally, you know, perhaps trigger symptoms, even knowing that you've got some of these games downloaded on your phone in your pocket can help you kind of push through those barriers. A lot of them focus around puzzle games, meditative music, really kind of breaking that cycle of negative thought and taking you away from it all.
I've got to tell you, yeah, because it has to be a certain type of game because I've played FIFA with friends and it has done nothing good for my anxiety or frustration whatsoever at all.
Well, this is the thing. Everyone is different and different games do different things to each of us. Mm. You know, for me, yeah, it is playing something like, you know, Breath of Light, which is made by Melbourne developers Many Monkeys. And it's just this beautiful little puzzle game with this amazing music. And it's just so calming and relaxing. And I'll take 10 minutes out of the office to play it. For other people, it really is jumping in a game of Call of Duty and just focusing on your kill-death ratio.
Carly from Melbourne says, as tacky as it is, playing Candy Crush Soda Saga really helps me when I'm feeling anxious. Just something to concentrate on. All the colours, popping things, etc. It's really satisfying. Sam from Echuca, boys, you should give Rocket League a crack. Simple game with a really high skill ceiling and fun for everyone.
A few people have mentioned Rocket League.
Rocket League is so good.
Pretty big at the moment.
Yep.
Soccer with cars, basically.
Soccer with cars is the best way to describe it. And yes, that is what it is.
Fun times. Sean as well from Cranbourne. Morning to you.
Yeah, g'day guys. How you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Sean. Tell us about your own video game application.
I sort of have dealt with anxiety and depression for sort of many years, going back to when I was in primary school, and video games have sort of gotten me through as a coping mechanism for ages, right back to playing on the Super Nintendo, like Zelda and other role-playing games, right up to nowadays, just thinking about going home after a hard day's work and, you know, getting on the video games and losing yourself in a whole different reality.
So what's your game of choice? What really relieves a little bit of this stress?
Oh, nowadays? Oh, there's quite a few. Dota, Ark, like survival games, World of Warcraft, stuff like that. Like just things that are completely different to the now and the like what you are today. You can just become someone completely different, and it's got a strangely calming sensation, but it's also like there's also that rage as well when you start to lose. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, they're quite intense games where there's a lot of action happening. A lot of them involve kind of fighting and warlike tactics. Does that not put you on edge more?
Oh, it does, but it's a strange sort of sensation because it's completely different to what I'm dealing with on a daily basis. It makes me forget my own problems, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess hearing articles or people coming out, so every now and again you see politicians saying violent video games are warping our child's minds and we need to do something about them, but taking normal children and making them violent or something like that. But for people who, you know, get stressed and like, want to take out, you know, their frustrations in a fantasy world, they don't never mention about people who are like, oh, go turn to video games for the exact opposite reason because it calms you down by doing it in these particular situations. Is there any research behind that, right?
Yeah, there's a huge misconception that in particular violent video games do cause people to become violent, which is absolutely false. And it's been proven in studies time and time again that unless there is a pre-existing anger disorder, that it can actually lower aggression and chill people out. You know, they're zoning out. They've got something to focus on, which
awesome.
Is great.
Awesome, Sean. Thanks very much for the call. What about yourself, Gabby from Newcastle?
Hi. Yeah, no, I started playing Skyrim, I want to say properly about 3 years ago, maybe about five, when I lost my dad and everything got, you know, pretty crazy personally. And it was definitely like a bit of an escape. It's just a really cool, easy game. It's gorgeous graphics. It's really chill. It's got good music. And you can obviously do the big quests, you can do the little side quests, but it's just really busy work. And you can really get lost in it and sort of walk away from it feeling really chill.
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How long would it take before you realise that you're straight into the game, into that particular chill zone after turning on the console?
I don't know if I want to admit, but honestly, quickly, so PC, just FYI.
But, oh, beg your pardon.
That's all right, no worries.
It's a cardinal sin that you have to be able to cross those.
Uh-oh. No, I don't judge.
I appreciate that one, Gabby. Well, thank you so much for chatting to us, and all the best.
Thank you.
Catch you later. Thank you very much, Ray Johnson, as well. Seems like a lot of people out there are, yeah, using video games in this particular way, even if it's with awareness that it helps their mental health, or just, you know, just unconsciously.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I myself was diagnosed with clinical depression a few years ago, and playing South Park, The Stick of Truth really helped me. So, yeah, look, RPGs in particular, like Skyrim and the South Park game even are great, because your missions are broken up into small amounts, so you can just kind of go, okay, I'm feeling this way, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to play a mission, I'm going to do this side quest, and just really helps.
And it's just compartmentalising tasks in those particular ways as well. All right, here's the challenge I need to do, and I've completed that particular challenge.
Exactly.
Incredible. All
awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Ray Johnston.
No
worries.
We'll
catch you later. Well, it isn't fair. We're talking earlier on.
Some people get chosen last all the time.
About a call yesterday, Sophie, you were going for a second day of flight attendant training. The girls had to stick behind to learn how to put on makeup correctly for their jobs.
Yeah.
Boys got to go down to the skewy sector. And a few stories coming in this morning about people who at their work, because you gave us a pretty interesting fact as well, Ruby.
Yeah, I've just read studies before that say that women who wear makeup to work, their colleagues kind of think they're more competent than women who don't wear makeup and better at their job, potentially.
Pretty full on.
Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Someone,
Emma from East Corrimal, sent us a text. Morning, guys. My old boss would have a go at me every other day for not wearing makeup, even to the point that one Christmas he got me a makeup kit. Still didn't wear it. He told me he would pay me more if I did use it.
Right.
Another person here said, I'm a beauty therapist. One of my first jobs in Brisbane was at a bathhouse. My boss pulled me aside one day, basically told me I look sick. Need to put on more makeup because I looked terrible.
Oh, man.
I was wearing a full face of makeup. What more do you want?
So, tough to get better than a full face. Now, I've put makeup on in the theatre before, Ruby.
Oh, really?
With the frown lines and various other things. Mm-hmm. But as far as the daily grind goes, I'm totally unaware. So yesterday I did say, in protest, I'll be trying it out to see what you need to experience. So if you know how to put on makeup and you've got some spare stuff that'd go well on a not that very well tanned.
But, you know, makeup
person.
Isn't the only thing that women have to do, you know. Like, I've got, you know, nail polish on right now. Do you need that as well, maybe? Or
yeah, well, you know? That's not essential, is it, for your job? I guess. Oh, let me know what I need. 0439757555.
Yeah, what grooming have you been forced to do for your job?
Yeah.
Now, Jason from Geelong texted in, said, I worked in a Christian bookshop. They had a very strict no facial hair policy. The manager would come to me every morning and look closely at my face.
Oh.
If I did not shave that day, she would say something like, oh, you didn't shave this morning, did you? That's not allowed.
What, every day?
Yes.
You can't have 2 millimetres of growth.
Which is strange, because the big man, Jesus, loved growth.
Bad for a beard. From the photos I've seen.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a photo of him fully shaven.
I don't think so either.
I've never seen, certainly not the little flavour saver underneath. I mean, just a little goatee or something.
Even the sculptors, they pop bulk beard on him. Goodness me. All right, well.
Another person says, I used to work in jail and I had the complete opposite problem. Not allowed to wear makeup. Or even a short sleeve T-shirt. It was ridiculous, especially in summer when it got up to 40 degrees. Needless to say, I rebelled. Never had a problem with the inmates anyway.
It's not just an issue of, you know, whether it's you're not allowed to wear your just normal face, which is you, but also if you're putting it on, the time in the mornings. I mean, it's so crucial for us, Matt O'Kine.
Someone, yeah, well, we...
I lay in bed. I had a 3-minute turnaround because I milked my bed so much this morning. I had 3 minutes to get up and into work.
This person, on the other hand, says, I'm putting on makeup right now. I have a whole morning routine, 1 hour each morning. I love it. I love how I look. I love how I feel. Makeup and grooming is slowly becoming a bad thing in the eyes of certain groups, and it sucks because I had someone at a hen's night tell me and my friends off for conforming by wearing makeup. Apparently it made us weak and it made men look at us only in a certain light. F that. I love makeup. I do it for me.
There you go. And you can't understand it until you live it, and someone might be able to help me. Hello, Eva from Avalon.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. What's your makeup experience?
So I've been a makeup artist for about 3 years, and I teach people how to do makeup, and I do, like, events and birthdays and stuff like that.
So you mainly do makeup for people who are expecting to be photographed or filmed?
Yes, I do. So I do a little bit of film here and there. Mostly I work for a company called Mecca. But I do a little bit of freelance for photography outside.
Well, what if you weren't even too keen on getting out there and being on camera and that sort of thing? You just want to go to your job and, look presentable and that sort of thing.
Oh, I can do a little bit.
Do a bit of that?
Yeah, I can do that.
Now, as a makeup artist, is there a requirement for you to wear makeup at work?
There is. I have to wear makeup most days. So I have to get up pretty early, do the whole face.
Because you guys are already up, I mean, makeup calls on set are like 4 o'clock in the morning most of the time.
Oh, yeah. So I've done a little bit of jobs here and there where I've got to get up four in the morning, got to do the whole, got to do the eyebrows, got to do a bit of lip, a little bit of blush.
Okay. Well, would you be able to teach me, Eva?
I can for sure teach you.
All right. First thing, just before I get into this, just for my basic stuff, how much would I be looking at paying to purchase all of these items that I'd need every morning?
And I know Alex Dyson as well. He does not stinge out on anything.
Okay? He doesn't stinge out.
He loves a quality product and loves a big brand as well, does Alex Dyson. So
I've covered the T-shirt that I'm wearing. Got it for free from – it's a Triple J T-shirt. That's all it is.
Mr. Take Two in his lunchboxes loves a brand. So, so what do you reckon? How much should he put aside to fund his makeup kit starters?
Well, you need a primer to help it last all day. So that's going to be about $40.
Okay, sure.
Foundation's
yeah.
About $70.
$70.
Hood. Mascara, about $35.
What?
About $35.
Okay.
Eyeshadows.
Yes.
How much does
keep going? No, keep going. How much? 60?
How long will it last?
If you're lucky, maybe about 8 hours.
No. But how long will it last in your
supply?
Oh,
surely.
Oh. I like to tell people about 3 months.
Okay.
So you should replace the mascara about every 3 months. A foundation, you.
It's costing more than my phone.
So we've got primer, foundation, mascara, eye shadow. Anything else? A lot of lipstick.
Yeah, your lipstick's going to be about $40. You need eye primer to keep the eyeshadow on, so that's going to be about
$35. Can't I use the other primer?
No, you can't. It's not going to work.
Not one size fits all,
mate. Completely different area of the face.
All right, so that's $315 total per quarter. So this is about $1,000 a year.
I'd probably feel a bit more because say you want to change it up, your day makeup changes from your night makeup.
You're not going to wear the same covers, same thing every single day.
No, you can't. You're living a boring lifestyle if you're doing that. You need to keep it fresh.
All right, so Alex Dyson so far looking at 145, 180, 220, 250, $250
or yeah.
Three. Just to get this, just to get one day going. I'm so glad you put your hand up for this, mate. Really proving a point here. Yes.
Thanks very much, Eva. We'll chat to you soon. Right now, you are with Matt and Alex on Triple J. It's 12 minutes past 8 and a beautiful time midweek on a Wednesday to talk to our next guest, who is actually our feature artist this week. We've been playing plenty of songs from his first album, Utopia Defeated. It's a very good morning to Dee Dee Dumbo.
Hello, hello.
Thank you very much, Oliver, for joining us. I'm just intrigued to know, what have you been up to for the last couple of days? Because you strike me as someone who's intensely musical and devoting all of your time to that. But what do you do when you're not doing that?
This is going to expose my true self. I've basically been checking Donald Trump's Twitter page every 10 minutes and waiting for the latest sort of scandal. So, yeah, although maybe I like to project some sort of musical introverted person, in reality I'm just after that sort of goss.
You're a news hound like the rest
of
us.
Wow, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Loving the cycle, just doing the quick refreshes. Hey?
Are there any songs that maybe we've played during the week so far that have been influenced by politics at all on your album Utopia Defeated?
That's a good question, but probably not directly. I think I'm happy to say, yeah.
We're going to be playing a song very soon, King Franco Picasso. Talking about kings, could they be also our presidents and prime ministers potentially?
Oh, Possibly. Maybe it could be vaguely referenced to North Korea. But that song's pretty much like a fictional dictator, living under a fictional dictator. So,
yeah, right.
But it could be some reference to Trump, unknowingly, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you seem to base a lot of the, certainly the lyrics, around sort of surrealism, a lot of existential topics coming up in your music. Well, no, don't be sorry. I'm just wondering, what do you got against love songs, mate?
Oh, I think there's almost one love song in there.
Almost? Yeah. But seriously, I mean, what spurs you on to, you know, constantly be asking why instead of going down a traditional route?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's like a vague interest in, you know, philosophy. Like, I'm a Peter Singer fan. He encouraged me to think, you know, yeah, I guess about sort of things that I'm interested in, although I'm not really articulating anything that's coherent in the lyrics, as you can probably tell. But, yeah, maybe I don't have a heart or something. That's not true. That doesn't make any sense, but, yeah.
You definitely have a heart. I mean, I'm intrigued by your constant asking of why. I mean, I saw a big post of yours on Facebook just recently. It was a few months ago now. But, I mean, you ended up in the area of talking about fungal infections and just constantly asking why. Do you ever find yourself, is it ever almost problematic that you're just asking why about the world so often?
I can't claim that I do more than others, although that Facebook post probably argues against that. But I guess it's, yeah, in many ways, people probably find it not practical to think too much. You know, like, you have to put on your socks each day. Well, most of the time. And like, I guess if you're so caught up in some, down some rabbit hole, that's going to prevent you from actually doing your job. I wouldn't recommend it. It's good to think about, these bigger issues, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure you would agree.
Yeah, certainly do. Sure. We're all trying to figure it out in some form or another. So hopefully we'll be able to get to the bottom of a few answers, or at least, yeah, thinking about the right questions. We do listen to DD Dumbo. He's our guest this morning on Triple J Breakfast. We're going to play that song that we mentioned, King Franco Picasso, and then jump back, because I do want to, as a fellow country Victorian, I do want to get into the influence that Castlemaine played in the music that we're hearing on your debut album. So let's hear it right now. This is King Franco Picasso. You're with Matt and Alex and DD Dumbo on Triple J Breakfast. Good morning. Out of all the kings in
on Triple J, that was King Franco Picasso. It's off our feature album this week, which is by an artist called DD Dumbo, and we're very, very excited to be chatting to DD Dumbo right now.
Yes, in the studio, Utopia Defeated is the name of the album. And where is this Utopia, Oliver? Is it the Castlemaine that we talked about earlier on?
Isn't it Castlemaine?
Well, we better ask the local.
That's a controversial topic, Castlemaine or Castlemaine. The locals generally say Castlemaine, and the blow-ins call it Castlemaine. So.
Oh, look at Dyson, the old blow-in, hey?
I've been to Castlemaine a couple of times.
City slicker rocking around, yeah. Thinking
he
knows
what's up. Make some all right ham around that area, which is good.
Growing up in Castlemaine, you went back there again recently. Does it feel like that's where you belong?
Yeah, so I guess I've lived there most of my life, lived in Melbourne for about 6 years and then moved back in the last couple of years. So, yeah, it does feel like home, and I guess only in the last 2 or 3 years have I realised it's like actually a really good town.
Whereabouts do you stay? What are your surroundings like when you're living there?
Well, I was just living in a place which I'm currently transitioning out of, in an old horse stables, without any horses, unfortunately, but yeah, like a kind of shed. There's some country around the back, some kangaroos, that sort of classic Australian scenery.
Delightful.
And you're just there by yourself?
I was, yes, but moving into another place soon, yeah.
Okay.
There was a couple of rats there as well.
So. did they?
A few housemates.
And a few
housemates.
Ninja turtles. So with this album, right, I've been enjoying some of the, all of the songs that we've been playing so far. I'm loving the embellishments, I would say, on them. You know, there's glitchy elements to it. There's some really nice little tweaks in there that kind of, they make you sit up or they make your ear ping to attention. I'm intrigued to know, are these calculated or did they come out of accidents that you then thought, oh, this sounds actually pretty cool?
It's probably a combination of the two. I reckon they mostly came out of accidents when I was writing the song, and then they became more calculated from realizing that they're kind of fun to do.
Yeah, because I thought it was an interesting angle, because sometimes, you know, you could just be playing the regular progression and then decide to change it up. But it's good to know that there's that fluidity in the creative process that you've got as well.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Little quirky bits, I call them. Yeah.
Little quirky bits. Oh, man, it's so good to hear them popping up throughout the songs. We're going to play another one in a moment, Walrus, before we say goodbye to Dee Dee Dumbo. But tell us about, because I mean, you're living in horse stables just outside of Castlemaine, tell us about where you actually recorded it as well and who you did it with.
In Wandsworth in London, home of Gordon Ramsay, apparently.
You didn't run into Gordon?
Unfortunately not.
Nah.
No, he did play the cello in the tracks, but I never actually saw him in the flesh. But no, basically lived in London for about 3 months in the 4AD studio. It's just this tiny little bunker, and I recorded it with the engineer there called Fabian Prin, who also played some of the drums and percussion on it. So yeah, it was pretty intense, sort of not a hell of a lot of sunlight in London anyway, but being in a bunker, yeah, with Fabian and Gordon for that amount of time, yeah, it was a bit rough, but it was fun.
We're chatting to Dee Dee Dumbo. We've been looking at his album all week on Triple J. It's our feature album. And just wondering, you've mentioned before, and you mentioned to us off air, that you can be a little bit sort of nervous when it comes to communicating, right?
Thanks for bringing that up.
No, well, I mean, the only reason why I ask is because there's no evidence of that whatsoever in your music. And, you know, throughout the whole album, it's such a huge, confident, unique sort of piece of work. I'm intrigued to know what it is you find different about communicating through music than you do when it's just face-to-face chatting.
Yeah, maybe it's just it comes more naturally. Perhaps I'm giving you a good contrast right now, I think.
But when you're on stage performing, how do you feel? How does that make you feel compared to, you know, in a conversation with strangers?
Apparently I do some funny facial expressions on stage, and people say that it's all going well, but it does depend. Sometimes I'm freaking out. Sometimes it's sort of, yeah, I'm sort of not really thinking about it.
For sure. Does that?
But I guess that could happen in a conversation as well. I don't know what my face is doing. just a chat.
Well, it's fine today. What about in a world in which there seems to be, we play so many songs now with people with so many cooks in the broth. We'll play, you know, Zoo and Skrillex featuring They, or, you know, various things. Do you find when you make music, you really need it to be your own vision and that you're able to bring to the record?
Yeah, definitely. At least in this project, I've definitely had the need to try and, like, you know, reproduce, you know, what I think it should sound like in my mind and stuff. Although I didn't really quite get there. I do feel like it's important for me, at least in this project, to, you know, be a control freak and not really collaborate with too many people on it.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, what about, you didn't quite get there. Is that an album number two? Are you going to strive for even greater heights than this first album? You want to do that or just go a different angle and attack it from a different way?
I've been thinking lately, like, I want to, record it entirely myself and try and do everything, basically, even more so. So that's the plan. I'm not sure if, you know, that'll happen or not, but yeah.
Well, fingers crossed, because we're loving what you've given us so far for this debut album. Right now, we've been looking at it all week. We're going to play a track from it now. It's called Walrus.
Yeah, and we'll let you go. Dee Dee Dumbo, thank you so much for hanging out with us this morning. Where will people be able to see you live next? You don't have a whole heap of live dates popped in. Anything on the horizon that we might be able to keep an ear and an eye out for?
Nothing set in stone, but definitely, you know, sometime early next year, I'm hoping to do a bit of touring. So keep your ears open, or whatever the phrase is.
That sounds about right. Awesome. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it, Dee Dee Dumbo. And
thank you.
Yeah, we'll chat to you next time.
Breakfast with Matt and Alex on Triple J.